Hello, everyone. I'm Al Deldegan, creator and producer of the Leaders, Innovators, and Big Ideas podcast, supported by Rainforest Alberta. This podcast showcases the people who are working to improve Alberta's innovation ecosystem. Let's join host Mike Procy as he learns of the powerful trait of ambidexterity and the challenger mindset with his guest, Sar Benatar. Take it away, Mike.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Al. And thank you very much, Sar Benatar, for joining us today. So Sar helps organizations and leadership teams drive strategic collaborations for outsized impact. He's also the author of The Challenger's Mindset. And so we're here to talk a little bit today about what that is and what that means. Thank you very much for joining us today, Sar. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's great to be with you. Just for correction, the book is called Challengers. So mindset is really at the core of it. But we decided to stick with a short name.
Oh, perfect. Good. Yeah, just Challengers. Excellent. Maybe we'll jump right into it with that in mind. Can you please share with our listeners a little bit more about the Challenger book and the Challenger mindset? What does this mean?
Sure. Look, I think mindset would be a great place to start. I mean, I know mindset is a term that's very often used, thrown around, bandied around. But really, at the core of it, what we are talking about is a construct of three parts. There's a part of mindset, and if we think of mindset as a lens, a way in which we see the world, a filter, as it were, there's three components to it. And very often those are misunderstood. The first one are the assumptions that we make. What assumptions are at the back of our mind, in our subconscious mind, that interpret reality for us? Whether it's a business opportunity we're looking at, whether these are risks, whether these are feasible or seen otherwise business models that we are willing to engage in, whether these are partnerships or other forms of collaboration or relationships that we are either willing to be part of or not. Assumptions play a big part of it. And what mindset work really is about, certainly for the team and I at Ascent, has very much been at making those visible to individuals. So we take them out of the subconscious into the conscious. The second part of it are beliefs. We all have beliefs. We've all grown up with them. Some of them were discarded in earlier part of our lives. Some new ones have come to be. And again, we want to make those visible. We want to make those palatable and understood by individuals as to where they come from. What is their set of belief? Not just what they espouse, but what they truly believe when they go into a business venture, when they go into a partnership, when they pursue a new opportunity in a new terrain. And the third part, often misunderstood, is attitudes. Attitudes also form part of your mindset. In fact, they can define and shape the shape of the lens, how you see the world, how broadly you're willing to venture, or what is your emotional response to it that holds you back. And very often when we speak to entrepreneurs, to heads of innovation, heads of strategy, CEOs in corporates, however the size, we get a very similar response across the board, which is I never understood of how much my emotions, my attitude has influenced the degree to which I can venture, I can collaborate, I can create value. So that's really in a nutshell what mindset is about.
It's funny because as you mention it and as you're talking about it, all of it is very palatable and kind of makes sense. It's like, yeah, of course my attitude, of course my learnings and my beliefs are all going to come into play here and impact how I operate. But actually thinking about it in the day-to-day and as you're working is something that I never considered or thought about. It's kind of more of a subconscious thing. So we've spoken before a little bit about challengers. I've been following your LinkedIn, learning a little bit more from your posts. And I'm kind of curious, so what areas or organizations should not be challengers? Who should not be following this challenger mindset?
You know, it's a great question. I guess kind of at the surface, I would say there are areas of work and otherwise where I think we should venture into challenging with extra caution. If you're in the field of safety, whether aviation safety or otherwise, mining safety, I know mining is a big industry in Canada as it is in South Africa, where I currently sit. There are areas in which one should challenge, but do it very carefully. Be very conscious of where do we come from? What is the the story that brought us here and the assumptions, beliefs, and attitude that it embodies before we go and start challenging. There are other areas in which we feel a bit freer to challenge, technological developments, for example. Again, I would say caution is a good trait to have, but we feel a bit freer to challenge in those areas. So I wouldn't say there are areas in which absolutely under no circumstances we should not challenge, but I would say there's certainly areas in which one needs to do it with absolute caution, with having greater reverence towards where we've come from, what we believe in, and why is that important? Maybe just as a quick example, I'm going to take you right to the another side of the world where we operate as well, which is Singapore. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really astounded me about Singapore when I started traveling there about 5 or 6 years ago is the degree of reverence that they have for their history, for their past, however painful, however difficult, however complex. And that is something that I've certainly taken personally in my approach to shifting mindsets and venturing into new areas. And in doing that, you would challenge the old. And I think that there's a wonderful story there about our entire nation takes particular care and still challenging. It is one of the most innovative nations on earth. Mm. And it has done astounding things as a country over the last 50 years or so. And they still do it with great reverence and care for their history. And I think there's a lot we can learn from that.
And there's a lot of similarities there, too, between the innovation mindset as well, or just innovating in general, and the challenger mindset. I often say, you know, I don't want my airline innovating too much. I don't want to be getting on that plane and worrying about something, right? Or I don't want Jugo Juice innovating too much, or adding something strange to my smoothie, right? There's certain things that you want that consistency and that safety in. And it sounds like it could be similar as well for challengers. So diving a little bit deeper into challengers themselves, what are the key traits required to be a challenger?
Hmm, good question. And, you know, we've spent a long while decoding this. And it's not an easy thing to achieve, because when people share stories with you, we sit with, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs, we sit with startup entrepreneurs, we sit with venture capital and private equity partners, and so on and so forth. And what we found at the end is that there are three things that stand out, and they are interrelated. So this is not meant as a kind of as a decoding. This is three separate, independent traits, but rather is three layers of the same underlying DNA. And if one can recognize those in oneself, then you're in a better space to start venturing further, to take some of your innovations, to take some of your ideas, take some of your collaborations, even at a nascent stage, and say, could I take this further? Where could this go? I really wonder. So the first thing we often look for, and we found in many of these interviews and in doing research in this area, is the ability to look at history and to reinterpret it while holding our assumptions very lightly. We often find that challengers are able to replay how we got here incredibly well and with incredible precision. And interestingly, they don't come to the exact same conclusion as innovators, and I would see challengers as a subset of innovators. Their story is unique. They will come up with strands of the story of how we got here and what did we achieve and amass as assets, as capabilities, as relationships in a unique way that others would struggle with. And for me, that's a great way of and a great trait, a real powerful trait that challengers have. At the same time, they are incredibly good when we look at the current state where they currently stand, having this nuanced understanding of the past is the trait of ambidexterity. They're able to hold two truths next to each other at the same time. And that's something that one could learn through leadership development. One could learn through mentorship. One could even learn through some forms of coaching. And what we certainly found as a team is that the ability to hold two or more truths at the same time enables you to have a different debate, whether you're debating with yourself whether you're debating with significant others and people who are close and dear to you, who might still see you as the crazy one, the person who is doing something that others simply don't understand and it may not work. Or when you're dealing in a similar conversation or tackling a similar conversation with your colleagues and ecosystem partners. So that's a really, really important trait. And again, similarly to the ability to draw very thin and incredibly powerful strands from your story, the historical narrative of how we got here, both of those things are learned traits. Those are things that we've seen time and time again. In fact, over the past 20 years, hundreds of individuals, again and again, it's something that one is able to learn if one is open enough to it.
And so it is possible for people to kind of adopt this methodology.
Much more, Mike, than people are giving themselves the credit for. Often people will tell us, well, I was born with this mindset, or that's how I've grown up, or well, that's my default mindset. And certainly in some of our assessment tools, we do find that there is a default mindset or a combination of mindsets, but the 80 to 90% of mindsets is situational. If you're able to and willing to learn, you would have a much more diverse and a much more powerful toolkit of different mindsets to use. In the same way that athletes would develop muscles to the degree and in a combination that is more powerful than non-athletes, the same way that mentally, as human beings, we can develop the diverse set of mindsets. And I guess that the third trait, and this is very much where ecosystem thinking comes in, is that challengers are able to see challenges as from a systems perspective. They're able to see it as a network or an ecosystem of relationships, of flows, whether those are financial flows, knowledge flows, intellectual property flows, and our ability to view those as flows makes it much more palatable for us. And in fact, gives us a sense of agency that we can influence those. I remember a particular example with a financial institution that we've been working with, where they looked at a particular opportunity that seemed fairly large for them. And they have identified three flows in their lending business that could be extended. This is in education finance. So this is a significant social impact on poor communities, in some cases of indigenous communities, of people who generally would not be willingly embraced by the formal system to be educated, to be funded and financed and supported for that. And in just drawing that ecosystem and helping people to adopt a mindset where they could actually see that ecosystem and think in ecosystems, what they were able to identify are 21 flows. Now, think of that for a moment, Mike. If you have 21 flows visibly in front of you and you have a mindset where you can see the opportunity in those, perhaps not in every single one for your organization, but with the right partnerships, the right collaborations, the right networks, you could tap into many of those versus the three original ones. The upside of this was, in that particular case, almost a tenfold increase in the opportunity just for that institution. When you look about what they did for the country and for the 1.5 roughly million students who benefited from that arrangement, you're looking at even a bigger multiple. And that's really the power of challengers. Because they have those three traits, because they're able to think in systems, when you put all these three traits together, they're able to both see and act on with greater agency on these opportunities. Perhaps just the last word and something we haven't spoken about, and that is the other side of opportunity, which is risks. What we find is that challengers are able more adeptly, with greater capability, with greater skill, to navigate risks that are inherent in challenging. In fact, when you challenge, you may reduce a certain set of risks that is inherent in a business model, in an ecosystem that is maturing and perhaps in some cases diminishing, losing some of its relevance. You know, we can talk about current state of ICE motor vehicles. We can look at many industries in which the current model is being challenged. But at the same time, new forms of innovation, new models are ascending. And because they have those three traits, they're able to navigate risks as much as opportunities on that balance of probabilities in that transition. They are great transition makers in a way. They are able to navigate and in many cases to thrive during that transition, not just in the 20 years ahead when the new model becomes embedded in the system, but rather during that transition time. And that is a very important, I guess, characteristic of these challenges. And that's why they thrive, particularly in those periods of time.
And we can think right now, I mean, in the world, talk about a time of massive transition. You have so many things happening right now. So having that challenger mindset and methodology could definitely be advantageous, especially when you're talking about, as you mentioned, seeing explosive growth in the next few years, really being able to seize those opportunities. But it's also really comforting and nice to know that this mindset can be developed. It can be learned. It is a trait just like anything else and a muscle to be flexed. So before we wrap up here, Sar, what is one thing you would like to leave our listeners with about being a challenger?
So the one thing I'd love for your listeners is just to think about a particular opportunity or a risk that they're trying to mitigate. So they could be in the strategy, in the transformation, in the CEO's office, in the enterprise risk management functions, in operations, in the commercial space, you name it. We find challenges all over. They could be outside an organization looking in or looking to collaborate and partner wherever they find themselves. I would want to ask them to look at one particular opportunity or risk that cannot be leveraged or taken away in the case of risk or mitigated purely within that organization or that system they find themselves in. What is that one thing that despite how capable they may feel they are, however great their team is, however reputable and competent their organization is, they know that they cannot fully leverage that opportunity or take away that risk by doing it internally on their own or within their current system? And that could be a great starting point to then have the challenger conversation about what could we do with this? What's the latent potential here? You know, Mike, we speak about full ecosystem potential. We found that on average, full ecosystem potential is 3 to 4 times in monetary value alone, just putting aside social impact, environmental impact, or any other form of impact, just for a moment, just monetary wise alone, 3 to 4 times bigger for that entity. Once we ask the question, what is the bigger ecosystem opportunity here? And what is our strategy? What is our plan to leverage that? And if your listeners perhaps can think of one thing, I'd love for them to share it with us in whatever channel or form they make available to you, Mike. I'd love to see what their response is.
Excellent. Absolutely, Sar. And we'll get that available as well in the podcast notes here. Huge thanks, Sar, for joining us today. A quick shout out as well. Your Challengers book is available on Amazon. Definitely pick it up and take a look to learn how a new breed of leaders collaborates and wins in a hyper-competitive world. I know that was something that really stood out to me, being of the collaborative mindset as well. So again, thank you very much, Sar Benatar, for joining us today, and have a wonderful afternoon.
You too, Mike.
If you haven't already, visit rainforestab.ca and sign the Rainforest Social Contract. Become part of the inclusive, silo-busting, sector-agnostic, all-industry, open-sourced, ego-shrinking, ecosystem-building, entrepreneur-focused, wide-open, social barrier-smashing community known as Rainforest Alberta.
This episode is brought to you by New Idea Machine, a unique blend of a tech incubator and a software development powerhouse. We're not just building software. We're crafting the next generation of homegrown tech wizards. Got a project in mind? Or looking to hire fresh talent? Reach out and let's make tech magic happen. Visit newideamachine.com for more info.
Music for the show was created by Tony Deldegan. Please be sure to share this episode with everyone you know. Also, don't forget to come by and say hi at the next Rainforest event. Let us know what you think of this podcast. If you're interested in being either a host, sponsor, or a guest of the show, send me an email at rainforestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.